Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
Issue number 30.
30. Yay.
Dirty 30.
Yeah.
That feels weird.
Dirty 30. I don't know.
Yeah. Nat.
I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me, as always,
is Pat.
And Cat in Hat.
Yay.
Yay. All is right in the world.
All is right in the world. Cat hat adjacent, but
right? Cat in
hat. Cat's wearing a hat. I don't feel like absolute garbage.
Yeah.
This is
exactly.
Nice.
Matt's hair is gelled this episode, yeah. So all of you listening at home can ooh and ah at his beauty.
Yeah, right?
just look at him, Cat. Isn't he just a specimen of man?
I'm like sitting over here, I'm like gay.
Oh my god.
Wait, is it like you're gay or more like gay?
I mean, honestly, pick.
you just sounded like Senor Chang.
Oh,
from Community.
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Well, this is already a weird start to the show, so if it gets any weirder, why don't you take us away from this with news?
Kat, you got news.
I mean, I guess we'll start off with the thing that is just annoying to me first, is San Diego Comic-Con has plans to go after bigger conventions if the lawsuit against Salt Lake holds, like New York Comic-Con. So basically it's an injunction to stop all cons from using the word Comic-Con or using it as any sort of advertisement, which for me, and they attempted to do, the thing that bothers me is they attempted to do comic convention, like the entire word, and that's
right.
What kind of bothers me is I'm like,
Well, even now they're like attacking a colloquialism, you know, like everybody
so
has just shortened it themselves to Comic-Con.
They're basically trying to trademark the term Comic-Con.
Yeah.
That's like literally the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah, they're doing a, like, because my girlfriend even
like
calls
the whole,
them anime cons. It's not
like
anime convention, anime con. It's
like the whole phrase, or is it like
they,
a specific
they attempted,
word?
They attempted
it,
to do comic convention, but the judge said that I'm assuming it was too far, but he basically said, oh yeah, Comic-Con, yeah, you can't do that.
So it's a weird thing because everybody refers to Comic-Con as, you know, at the San Diego convention, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you talk about Comic-Con, it's the big one. It's San Diego Comic-Con. And everything else gets its
prefix.
Yeah, it's prefix
to
it.
Yeah.
So it's like Fort Collins
Comic-Con,
New York Comic-Con.
Denver Comic-Con.
Yeah. And then
even people in Colorado, you know, the day of Comic-Con would be like, yeah, I'm going to Denver Comic-Con.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like when you refer to Comic-Con, you're like, oh, yeah, it's talking about San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So something that is already identified with them, why do this? Like, why? What's the point?
I just feel like it's like the most, like, I feel like it's like freaking nerd rage. It's dumb.
I mean, for advertising purposes, I guess it's important to them. But everybody's just going to call it what they're going to call it anyway.
The thing, like I said, the thing that bothered me is they literally tried to copyright the word comic convention.
Yeah,
and that, I was like, I'm like, and honestly, like, the way I, like, when I read it, I'm like, way for shit to rise to the top. Way to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, this is way more of a thing than it needs to be, which is, like, the only reason I'm pissed off about it, I don't really care, like, what San Diego is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they really want to be known as the Comic-Con, but, like, the fact that they're doing this and, like, making this, like, a thing, like, why?
I'm actually going to Salt Lake City Comic-Con, which now it's called FanX Salt Lake City, which is stupid.
See, but that, okay. Continue. I'm gonna write FanX down.
FanX.
It's called FanX. So they forced them to change their names. Phoenix Comic-Con is changing. They changed theirs to, like, Phoenix something Fest, and then they're changing it again next year, and then someone else also changed their name to basically avoid dealing with
them. Ooh, Nerdfest. Let's just call it Nerdfest from now on.
Yeah, seriously, but yeah, they're basically,
San Diego can be the only Comic-Con.
there's other comic conventions changing their name so they don't have to deal with San Diego Comic-Con.
See,
and they're talking about trying to work it out with New York to where they don't say it anymore either. So it's no longer New York Comic-Con, it's New York whatever, and I'm just like,
ah. You're just getting people to settle out of court now?
Yeah, they're basically just trying to force their hand, and I'm just like,
It's so stupid because you've now taken away a descriptor term.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, it's like, what is this? Oh, it's a comic convention. Like, it's necessary for the, the branding and to get out to the general public to say what the thing is.
I feel like nerd culture in general, too, is literally about, like, the, like, splicing together an acceptance of new ideas and, like, these, like, weird, you know, just, like, taking everything and making it into something new or something like that. You know, you see people who are cosplaying as, like, steampunk Hulk, Doctor Strange, or something like that, you know, like...
It's kind of odd, and I did this as you were talking, and this came to me, is the Comic-Con that is least like a Comic-Con is San Diego.
Yeah, that's the thing that's basically, like, irritated me the most.
That's true, because it's more like a forum.
Yeah.
Almost.
It's really like a pop-con. Pop culture in general.
Bringing up this show, but, like, the Cleveland Show did an episode about San Diego Comic-Con and them taking it back.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, that's true. Like, it's very much, you know, the big announcements from the film studios happen there. And it's not like, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about movie trailers, and one of the ones we talked about was Godzilla, which is, like, tangentially related to comic books. It's not really, like, like Godzilla.
And see, that was the thing that bothered me the most, is it's like, people aren't going to San Diego Comic-Con for comics. They're going to San Diego Comic-Con for... Because it's San Diego Comic-Con.
Right. Which is interesting because, you know, we just had Fort Collins Comic-Con this past weekend, and that was very much, it was comics. You know, that was what people were there for. Comics and trade. So, like, a lot of, you know, people doing, trade arts. Like, I keep thinking of leather work.
I guess the best way I can put it is, like, there were ads on my Facebook for... Funko Pops from San Diego Comic Con for Dragon Ball Z, and I'm like, this is literally anime.
Yeah.
So
even if you, like, extend it to manga, it's still like four steps removed.
That's kind of the thing that bothered me the most. I'm like, you're literally like the least comic can. Okay.
Side note. Those pops were pretty sweet looking.
Oh no, some of them were pretty great.
They're being obsessed with, like, the legalities of Comic Con. I'm just, like, now thinking about them, like, you know, doing cease and desist with, like, the conventions. Like, I'm imagining them now, like, doing that with the people that attend. Like, who are you supposed to be? Oh, I'm Captain America. Oh, that's a cease and desist. That property is owned by Disney. Do you have the rights? Like, why would you, literally have, you know, thousands of people coming in copyright infringement.
Right, exactly.
Make your money.
It was talking about how at least they let them keep all their merchandise, considering that, like, it's next week or whatever. So, it's just, like, I don't know, like, it's like, disheartening.
Yeah,
whatever.
Like, way to shit on your own community.
Yeah. All right, let's move past this.
Yeah, let's move on. What do you have for us?
Really weird bit of news. The special makeup effects artist Greg Nicotero has been joined the project for Spawn to do the look of Spawn in the new film. But what's really cool is one of his first projects doing visual effects and makeup was 1997's Spawn. So this is a full circle moment where he was involved with the original Spawn film and gets to actually now work with Todd McFarlane on the new Spawn movie.
Oh, really?
Did they ever cast who it was going to be for Spawn?
Yeah, it's Jamie Foxx.
Okay, that's what I thought. Oh, yeah, I just remember seeing he was like, I want to be Spawn! I want to be Spawn! Hey, I want to be Spawn!
And apparently that was one of
I think they'll make a pretty good Spawn.
Yeah, I think so too.
I haven't really watched many films with Jamie Foxx, and I don't really know anything about Spawn either.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for the Spawn movie. I don't know why. There's just something about, like, the allure of a horror film where your title character is the shape and the horror of the story. So,
Yeah, that is sort of an interesting. We'll see.
I thought it was a cool piece of, like, note, you know, to see your career get that full circle. You know, it's cool. I thought it was fun.
Cool. Yeah, I have a little bit of fun fact right here. I saw that the Venom soundtrack is apparently, for one, Eminem is going to be doing a song for the Venom soundtrack, which I was like, what? And then it's all apparently the soundtrack is also on Fandango's top five. or the sorry, the movie is on Fandango's top five most anticipated movies, which it was weird for me because especially talking to you and most other people, everyone I've ever talked to has been like meh.
Yeah,
it's been a good point for most people from what I've seen.
Yeah, so the fact that I saw both of these things and I was like, "What is happening here?"
To even continue off that, Tom Hardy's already been signed for a trilogy for it.
Yeah,
I'm glad that that hasn't been like out as like public knowledge. It's just one of those things that's like come up in conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's not the studio putting the cart before the horse. Like they have plans to sign him for three films, but it's not like they've put three films into production and
one. He basically said like that he signed for three of them and they haven't done anything, and it's basically all speculation on if this does well, what they'll do next.
Which is smart. I think that all of that decision making sounds really smart. Putting Eminem in part of the soundtrack, signing your lead star, which is one of the big draws of the film, to a three picture deal to be able to, you know, you can advance the story if you want to, but not making a story based on three parts.
I feel like, isn't this a little soon? I don't even know how the first one's
all right. Well, and that's the point. You talk about the Power Rangers franchise where they announced there was going to be five films and the first one bombed, essentially, so they didn't get the opportunity to do that. Whereas this is just saying that there's.
They're doing it, though.
That is unconfirmed that it's a sequel. That's a side conversation.
So is he signed for specifically... So is it going to be a trilogy or is he signed for three movies?
He's signed for three movies.
Yeah.
So... Spider-Man thing and then they could do a Carnage thing, you know? So yeah. It doesn't have
they
to be three
do,
specific
movies. From my understanding,
movies.
Like, people are speculating they won't... Until it's, like, successful, he won't join the Spider-Verse.
There's also a theory that he might actually be the hero of the Sony Marvel Universe that... So Venom will be your, like, key character that will be in other people's films. Hmm. So he'll be, like, the anti-hero character that'll take on other villains in different movies. So.
Meh.
I don't know. I just, like, saw the preview for it, and I'm like...
I don't know. What's happening in the Venom comics is really cool. I just don't think that stuff will translate into what's going on in the film.
No.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
All right. Yeah.
That was a weird, like, tangent we got on.
Yeah, that's all I gotta say about that. What else you got for us, Kat?
Oh, I guess the Nat posted this, like, a few days ago, and I refused to read it before I read Shattered Grey. I'm like, no, you're not spoiling shit for me.
Yeah, no spoilers.
So I went and, but the Power Rangers, so the Go-Go Power Rangers, that comic line, the original Rangers are gonna switch colors. So Trini's gonna be red, Zach is pink, Jason is yellow, Billy, I hate saying this because it sounds weird, but Billy is black, which is rings true in the film.
Right.
And then Kimberly is blue. So, I'm stoked for it. I'm curious what's going to happen. Because
it definitely looks like Trini is going to lead the team. Mm-hmm. So that's like, it's a cool
idea. There's also apparently it looks like her and Jason might be a couple too.
Yeah. Which I'm down for. That's cool.
But, I'm super stoked. I finished reading Shattered Grid, and I was like, I need another!
It was really weird reading Shattered Grid, and this is a weird tangent, that, like, hearing the original Rangers voices my head.
Right.
And I hadn't had that experience with reading the Power Rangers series, and I don't know why. I always have Tommy's voice in my head, Jason, David, Frank, but I think that's just, like, he's so in the public eye. But when I was reading Shattered Grid, for whatever reason, all of the character voices were the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
But yeah, I'm super stoked. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm game.
I know. I don't want to keep reading this book. I started reading Shattered Grid just because I was intrigued by that storyline. I need to drop comics, and now they're doing stuff like this, and the idea behind Mighty Morphin.
Probably my favorite series right now. It even beats Superman just with that. Like, they managed to keep all the nostalgia, but do different things.
Yeah, and now they gave themselves an out to go, like, really fucking crazy, which is awesome.
Well, yeah, because the main title, too, I don't know what the hell they're doing with that, but that looks awesome.
That looks so cool.
So, the covers I've seen, I'm like, what?
Yeah, a little preview at the end of Shattered Grid.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just like, what?
I'm glad they're doing this. I'm glad that they've gotten... And Hasbro's involved now, which I think is really interesting that, like, the Hasbro exec was... discussing this with the rest of, like, the Power Rangers creative team.
Well, in the back of my mind, I'm like, what toys do I get? What do I get?
That's actually really cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? They haven't done a line of toys based on the Boom Studios comic work, and that would be a really, like, smart thing for them. They're getting a Pop figure, though.
You just be like, Kat, why are you so poor? I don't want to talk about it. Is that like a replica of the Tiger Sword? No.
I want all the Megazords from Shattered Grid.
Oh my god, they were awesome.
They were awesome. Yeah. Brave Zord.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. Nice. What do you have for us, Matt?
A little bit of casting news. We'll hit two at once here. So, Star Wars cast Matt Smith and Dominic Monaghan in unspecified roles for Star Wars Episode 9. Mm. Interesting thing is Dominic Monaghan was on an interview recently with a YouTube channel that I watch. And they talked about Star Wars. And they asked him about, you know, because he's close friends with JJ, if he would be involved in, you know, Star Wars, and like, is he knocking on JJ's door and be like, you'll put me in? And Dominic's response was no. It's more like, JJ, is there something that's worth my while for this? So if he's in the movie, that means that JJ had something juicy for him to be in the movie. So that's a good sign. And then the Variety Report, I believe, said that Matt Smith had a key role in the movie. So that it sounds like these might be more like glorified cameos, but actual characters in the Star Wars universe, which I think that's exciting to me. Mm-hmm. I like both of these actors a lot. Matt Smith is my favorite Doctor from Doctor Who. So,
really,
yeah, absolutely, he's the whimsical Doctor. Another conversation. Mm. That one, if you catch me in the shop, I will talk your ear off about why I like Matt Smith more than Dave Tennant.
See, so. I like. Total tangent here. I'm a Peter Capaldi guy.
Oh, really? I haven't seen the last season. So.
Terrible episodes. Amazing Doctor.
Okay.
He's in by far the worst episodes
of this new run.
Yeah.
So Doctor Who falls in that category.
Yeah.
Of One Piece for me, which is I refuse to start it because I will never, ever, ever.
Yeah.
We should totally have a Doctor Who episode. Like, anyway.
Okay. Oh my god. Tangent.
That's the name of the game today. The next piece of movie casting news was Alec Baldwin has been cast as Thomas Wayne. Hold on, I have somebody talking to me right now. Alec Baldwin has not been cast as Thomas Wayne in the Joker films.
No, he was cast, and then he said no.
Yeah.
Wait, literally. What? What happened? That's, yeah, there's right
what,
now there's a big
what was
question
it? It was
mark.
Like 2 days?
A day. There was a
just
day.
One day?
Yeah, it was. Alec Baldwin was announced as playing Thomas Wayne in the Joker film. Not in the new, you know, Matt Reeves' Batman.
Yeah.
In the Joker film. And then the next day, he's like, yeah, you know, 25 other people could play this role. I'm not one of them, though.
See, I didn't read into it. I just heard that he was like, they're like, yeah, he's this. And then the next day, no, I'm not.
Oh, so he turned it down because he just didn't think he was right for the role?
I don't. At this point in time, we don't even know if he was even offered the role. Like, if it was just one of those
then
things
why
where,
would they
like, somebody.
He was cast as.
Because it wasn't Warner Brothers that announced it. You know, it was another reporting agency, like, breaking a story that Alec Baldwin had been cast.
A random.
Well, there's so many news outlets at this point in time, you know, it's hard to figure out where the information is correct.
So it was basically fake news.
Maybe. The other thing was they're saying that the character was going to be like a Trump-like figure, like, and feeling like a failed politician in the 80s, because the movie's set in the 80s.
Yeah.
And which would be an interesting portrayal of Thomas Wayne, because Thomas Wayne gets kind of done both ways as like one of the great philanthropists and like pillars of the community, or as being kind of like a scumbag, like doing things behind the back of the industry.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting portrayal, and there's a bit of maybe winking at everybody and that he is actually cast, but he's making like a fake news sort of ploy as his response.
Yeah.
Where he's not like denying it, just saying, oh, yeah, 25 other people could play that role. You know, that could be anybody being in that. And so
I mean, I didn't want this movie anyway, so I'm just like, eh.
I didn't want this movie, but I'm still so intrigued by the idea of Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker that that's going to put my butt in the seat.
So I can't, I know, right? It's like that. Every time I imagine Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker, it's just,
yeah.
I imagine his character from, like, The Master, but just laughing.
Yeah. Like, I, exactly.
With his face painted, like. Oh my gosh, he's.
Well, I can't complain about a movie. There's like two that slide underneath that rule, but I can't complain about a movie until I see it. So.
But yeah, I don't know. I would have liked Alec Baldwin as Thomas Wayne. There was a part of my life where I thought Alec Baldwin would have been like the best Batman casting ever. So.
Huh.
Yeah. I'm also one of those people that I really liked The Shadow, in 1990s movie for like the time.
Fair enough.
Yep. I've got something that just like hurt my soul a little bit when I read it. Netflix plans to do a sequel to the Death Note movie, so the one that they made.
Okay.
No.
Critically.
No.
This film was panned.
Apparently, it was a moderate success for Netflix, and I'm like, what?
See, this is like. Okay, I got a problem with Netflix on this one instance, is people click and watch shit that they don't necessarily like.
I couldn't finish it.
And that's my point. It's like, if you're basing all your numbers like on the number of, let's say it's a 2-hour production, so somebody has to watch 45 minutes for it to count, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't finish it.
I feel like people have accidentally clicked on things for 45 minutes, you know, and sat there and sat through it. So even though, like, fan response was bad, critical response was bad, because enough people clicked on it, we're getting a sequel? Like, I don't...
I don't think it's that simplistic. They have a very advanced, like, algorithm.
I've had people tell me that they thought it was great, and they're like, oh, it's just a different rendition of it. I was like, but they changed... The whole point to Light is he's incredibly intelligent, incredibly manipulative.
That dude was just an
idiot in that movie.
As a fan of Death Note myself, I honestly really enjoyed the movie, except for their... I was trying to watch it as a standalone. Like, I was not trying to
divorce it from the original.
Yeah. And so, as a movie itself, it's incredibly well filmed. It has a great soundtrack. The actors are great. The only bad part is that their character arcs are sort of weird in the end. Just how L sort of snaps after, what's-his-name's death. You know, his sidekick.
I never watched it because I haven't seen it.
No, who's his sidekick in the show? The old guy with the briefcase?
I don't remember. Oh,
anyway,
I don't know what you're talking about.
But, like, I don't know. They just had an inconsistent character arc towards the end of the movie. That was my only
flaw
in it. And I can see people who love those characters, that would be too big of a flaw for you to get over.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't... I think the thing that's... Like, I understand trying to divorce it from the own, but, like, the thing was, I felt like the dude, the way they characterized Light, he was a fucking moron, which I didn't really care for.
Yeah.
I missed the intelligent aspect of it, and I felt like instead of him manipulate, it was reversed in the way that the manipulation went down, which I also didn't.
He wasn't a moron. He was too impulsive, is what it was.
Can I make a criticism, having never seen either of these?
Hmm.
Sure.
Why did they name them Light and L? Couldn't it have been Light and M? Because the idea of L and Light is very confusing to an outsider when people are talking about two different characters.
Yeah, I mean, they could have, but there's actually other people that come in later in the show that are just like M and N.
Oh, okay, yeah. So there are other letters.
So there actually is an M
that comes in.
What is it, Greg Russo to write the script? I guess he's going to be the one who writes the Mortal Kombat reboot, and then no word if Adam Wingard is going to return.
He's probably not. Isn't he working on the Kong versus Godzilla movie?
Who was the one that got his ass handed to him for that movie? And he was just a dick about it.
What? I think it was him. I think it was Adam Wingard, the director.
Oh, the director?
Yeah.
See, like I said, his camera work on that I thought was absolutely great. It has the aesthetic is like perfect for the movie.
Hmm.
From that standpoint, I thought it was really enjoyable.
I mean, I guess there's a positive spin on this is that Netflix is putting money into things that they feel like, you know, should be...
Why not? They're making so much goddamn money right now, they can do whatever they
and
want.
And the content is great. Like, I feel like it's impossible to go to Netflix and be like, nothing's on. Like, you know, in the era before the streaming services, there was a time you would flip through 365 channels and be like, well, there's nothing to watch.
Yeah.
Whereas Netflix is like, ah, I've seen already this season. I'll probably just watch five episodes
instead.
It's
probably the other part of it is I have this really unnatural bias right now, which I'm like, please stop making animes. Live action, just stop. Like, we can end this now, please.
I think that is a definite, like, conversation that should be had. Is like, is it really worth it? Because so much of anime is about Japanese culture, and it just, it doesn't work when you try to translate it into an American production. It's like,
well,
it's
missing
something.
Well, the other part of it was, too, is just, like, I always, like, the other part of it, too, is, like, in that movie, they... Because of our own culture, everything's really... I mean, not saying that Japan's not sexualized, but the way that Death Note was, there was no, like, sexual anything when it came to him and that other character. And in this movie, I think, like, within the first 20 minutes, they're, like, doinking each other.
Oh.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I feel like, at least American directors, oftentimes, when they do, especially a book adaptation, or mangas included, it has this really weird... like aesthetic to the movie where it's like it's you can almost feel like they're trying to stick too close to the original book.
I think honestly it should just leave it alone. I'm good.
I think if they had the right right creative team to do something they could do it, but like they hardly ever
get the right
people who have an eye for adaptations. So that's all I gotta say about it. But you should watch the Death Note series if you've never seen it.
I would suggest that. It's really good. Honestly, the last part of it sucks. But, you know, the beginning part's great. The ending's terrible.
Season 2. It had to be there, but it's only like a third of the show.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess I have only one more bit of news to talk about, which would be the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 story just doesn't stop.
No.
so apparently... it doesn't stop because it did stop. The entire movie...
Can't stop, won't stop.
Yeah, can't stop, won't stop.
I'm about to start singing Journey.
Because it's, because it's on indefinite hiatus.
Yeah.
For unspecified reasons, but I don't know. I feel like we could take a couple stabs at guessing what those reasons are.
Yeah.
Mainly, I would venture to guess that the studio is not backing down and neither are the actors, and so they're just at a classic standoff at this point.
I think this is the first bit of news that's come out with Guardians 3 that's made sense.
Sitting over here, I'm like, this is a Mexican standoff. Now I'm stuck with Archer
in
my head.
Publicly announcing that it's on permanent hiatus lets cooler heads prevail, too. You take the time to restructure what Phase 4 is going to be. You know, you only really have one film associated with Phase 4, mm-hmm. and that is Spider-Man Far From Home. Everything else is still part of this final, you know, end of Phase 3 sort of scenario.
Yeah.
And there's only two films that you have left. So Guardians 3 would have been sort of your launching on point for what Phase 4 was going to be. Mm-hmm. But... if you divorce that information, you say, okay, public, we don't know what we're doing with this. You know, it's going to let people calm down and make actual rational decisions later and potentially have a good movie rather than something that is rushed and trying to find the right people making it. There's a lot of, like, fans saying, let's just get Taika, let's just get Taika, let's just get Taika. I'm not a fan of that idea. I think their comedic styles are very different from one another.
Oh, yeah, definitely. His is a lot darker.
Yeah, Taika's a big... which is funny because James Gunn is the horror... Well, I guess they're both horror directors, too. there was... Mark Riley with Collider Video made a really, really awesome prediction. And it kind of made my head spin a little bit. You scrap Guardians 3 entirely... and you continue Thor's story with the Guardians, and you do Asgardians of the Galaxy, and you do, then you have Taika come in and write that movie as a sequel to Ragnarok and a sequel to Guardians 2, where you have Thor traveling around with the Guardians.
That would be kind of cool, but I don't know. That still doesn't like address the main issue.
Then it's not going to be addressed.
Nope.
Yeah.
I think if you're not making Guardians 3, then you can throw away the script. You can make an entirely different movie.
Yeah.
Because right now they're beholden to that script in order to keep some of the actors around.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't know. Anybody else have anything to say on that one?
I've basically hit my point where this is so drawn out, and I'm like, I knew it was going to happen before they said anything because of the fact that they couldn't like. It's just like, I'm mad at you, you're mad at me, we're done talking, is basically just what happened.
Yeah, that's weird.
There is another X factor in this, too, that we, sort of the blessing in disguise, is if this was going to be your spearhead for the next, like, set of movies, and then Disney acquired Fox, which sort of opens up the potential for what other characters you can use, might be time to utilize different characters as a gateway into cosmic universe and like bring in something entirely different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, fair. I guess yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they proceed from here though.
Yeah.
Cool. Either of you got any more news for us?
I wanted to talk about Marvel announcing the team for Conan the Barbarian.
Ooh,
so Marvel
nice.
Just reacquired the rights to the Conan comic book.
Yeah, because it was owned by Dark Horse, right?
It was, and Dark Horse had an absolutely fantastic run for a number of years. So some, you know, hardcore Conan fans are a little sad. But I am optimistic because they announced Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Asrar as the creative team for Conan the Barbarian.
Yay!
And Jason Aaron has been doing barbarian type stuffs for a number of years with Thor.
Yep.
So this should be an interesting fit.
Yep.
It seems in many ways that he can't get away from this type of character because he's still writing Thor, and eventually Thor will end and he'll be doing Conan. So go figure.
That's funny.
But
yeah,
I like Jason Aaron a lot, so that's a really positive announcement for me.
Definitely his style should attribute to the comic very well.
Yeah. And Asrar was the artist on X-Men Red, which I really dug, so.
Cool. Yeah, that should be good art. Nice.
Should fit the tone. But that's all I have for news.
Yeah, that's the last bit of it. Cool. What else? Do you have anything, Kat?
I've got nothing else. I thought there was one other thing that I wanted to say. That's why I look confused at you.
I know, right? I feel like there's something else we forgot to mention. But this week was pretty light on news.
Not really intense news. Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I thought it had something to do with the Action Comics 1000.
Well, that's going to be our discussion later.
Oh, okay. So. I was like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
I guess the only other thing was Disenchantment came out right after we recorded our last show, so I didn't get to say that, but watch that. That was pretty cool.
I wasn't a fan of episode one. Maybe I'll give it another shot.
Yeah, fair enough. But that was a show.
Baby, come back.
Alright, well, I guess we're going to move to our new segment.
Yay!
We're going to move to the top of the stack. So what this is the...
There is a literal stack right now.
Yeah, right? Each of us have a literal stack of comics. So this is what you either brought to the top of your stack because it was the first thing you were excited about and wanted to read, or retroactively what you would have put at the top of the stack because maybe it was your favorite thing that you read this week or of the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, I feel like, everybody, or at least for me specifically, every time I get my comics, I always arrange them in a specific order that I want to read them and put. For whatever reason, there's always the first one that you're going
to
read.
Yeah. See, I was shocked at what managed to, because I read something first, and then I read the one that is my favorite, like fifth or sixth, and I was like, yes!
So we'll talk about each one of these for us. This is not going to be a review, but more like a quick, like, why the heck was this the top of the stack for you?
And, yeah.
You know, obviously highlight the creators. So I will go first. I've got Beyonders number one. This is actually from Aftershock Publishing, written by Paul Jenkins with art by Wesley St. Clair. And this moved to the top of my stack because this is a comic book that is written for me. It's a comic about conspiracy theories and linking things to ancient aliens and robots. And, of course, there's a corgi that does more than the main characters and has one eye, and the corgi's adorable.
Oh, he doesn't have an eye patch? I want him to have an eye patch.
I think he has an eye patch later on. Right now, it's just... Oh, no, I guess it is an eye patch. The art's really, like, impressionistic, so you don't see where the eye patch, like, attaches. But it is a really, really awesome first book, and I was super excited to finally get to read this, so... Yay, Paul Jenkins is back.
Yay. Nice. Cool. I guess I'll go next, mostly because this is kind of a funny one for me. I was actually in the store picking up my comics, and Nat was suggesting to me this segment, and as I was getting my stack, and I moved this one up to the top, and he's like, oh, see, there you go, that's your top one, and I was like, no, it's an annual, so it's big, so I probably won't, I usually like to read longer ones last, and then I got home, and I was like, I think I will put this one at the top of my stack, actually. So this is the Silencer Annual number one. I'm forgetting the... Written by Jack Herbert. Or, sorry. Written by Dan Abnett with art by Jack Herbert. And this was such a great story. I'm a huge fan of the Silencer. I don't know why. I usually hate run-and-gun type storylines. This one's, like, intense. I would love to see a crazy, like, spy movie about this. Like... And the story is basically, like, it opens up with her husband being like, hey, remember we met in Gotham and, like, that's where I'm from? Like, why do we never go back there anymore? Like, to visit old friends or whatever. And then it flashes back to her earlier days as an assassin and going to Gotham, running into Batman.
Oh, that's awesome.
And all that stuff. And it's really cool that the action sequences in this are, like, really dope. Abnett's, like, style... Herbert's style for, like, action sequences is just so badass.
Nice.
It was just a fun, cool read.
So why did you put it to the top of the stack?
You know, I honestly wanted to see, like, her interaction with Batman. Like, she hasn't really, except for Talia al Ghul, she hasn't really run into any, like, or many main characters. And Deathstroke, like, briefly. And it always keeps talking about, like, her backstory, but, like, back in the day. And so... This was like a flashback story, I like to see that. In her main title, you don't really get almost any flashbacks, but everyone constantly talks about her past and stuff. So you get like that through that, but this is actually like a full story in the past. So
nice,
cool stuff.
All right, Kat. Cool. What is your top of the stack?
I thought it was going to be the Power Rangers Shattered Grid, and then I was, like, surprised because it was actually Catwoman and Tweety and Sylvester. It was... I'm sorry, I fucking loved it. Tweety Bird hits Catwoman with a mallet. Like, this is, like, literally the most Looney Tunes thing I've read.
That's awesome.
I think out of all the Looney Tunes ones that I've read, this is the most Looney Tunes one out of all of them.
Who wrote this one?
I think it was Gail Simone, and then I don't remember who the artist is. I'd have to actually, like, flip through, like, move this, like, 14-pound stack real quick.
I thought that one was funny just for the fact that you have all the cat-themed heroes fighting all the bird-themed heroes.
The thing was, is, like, it was, like, so true to Sylvester and Tweety Bird. Like, Tweety Bird's, like, throwing out insults.
Yeah.
You a bad lady. I bet you never marry Batman.
Aww. they did a lowbrow Batman marriage.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Dude, they had other ones in here, too. Like, I'm pretty sure Tweety Bird calls Black Canary a whore.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not, like, an actual...
Wow!
Not, like, outright, but she basically says, huh, isn't that a little tight?
That's awesome. So what was your reason for putting it to the top?
I just, like, the entire time I was reading this, I'm like, I want to read more of this. Like, it was ridiculous. I was watching a Looney Tunes cartoon all over again with Sylvester and Tweety. Like, I'm sorry, like, a little Tweety Bird just takes out a mallet and hits her in the head. I was like, what am I reading? And the other thing is, too, the one thing I will say, it should be called Catwoman, Black Canary, Sylvester and Tweety, because Black Canary is in both stories in this comic. I didn't really understand why it was just called Catwoman in that.
She's basically the they're both main characters.
I mean, they're both cracking jokes and stuff. I mean, at one point, Catwoman tells her, she's like, oh yeah, I'm more ladylike than you. And then she's like, oh yeah, about being ladylike, I completely lie, and then hits her with a garbage can.
That's awesome. Awesome.
So, and like, they did all the writing in the voice, in like the, in the voices, so like, you know, Tweedward's got all the weighty, and, or what was there, like, one of it was like, help! Police! Doberman! Captain Marvel!
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So, I don't know, it was just like reading a Looney Tunes cartoon with Catwoman and Black Canary.
That's really cool.
That's cool. Nice. I would say that's a successful first.
I think that's definitely a recurring segment, getting more comics into the our main show here.
Yep. Since this is the world's greatest podcast about comics
and pop culture.
And pop culture. Yes. Exactly. So and everything.
Yeah, right? And everything. All right. So we're going to move into a little bit of a discussion here that is it's going to be a bit controversial, and it might have some offenses, and I apologize in advance for that, but I had kind of an extreme reaction to this. So in Action Comics 1002, written by Brian Michael Bendis, there is a moment, and I will read the quote in just the entire panel. So this is a villain. He's mob boss Moxie.
Nice alliteration.
Yeah, right. All right. So ready? I'm gonna do my best, like sort of gangster voice. This sounds like a fancy talk where you have your head up your own ass on our dime. We pay you to keep the eye on the guy in the sky. One job. Is Superman in Metropolis or not? You autistic fuck. So. Seem like an innocuous thing, just somebody, well, there's no actual curse, it's got, you know, the weird like ampersand symbols.
Oh yeah, yeah,
that's what's there,
the F.
Yeah, the, yeah,
everybody,
yeah,
exactly. Everybody knows
we know what he's,
yep,
saying.
Yeah.
So in writing terms, using a
voice, yep, voice is specifically like the voice that people use to talk in.
Yes.
Or, you know, characters have it, the narrator has, right, one if there's a specific narrator. Voice.
Well, and the character uses autism as a descriptor, derogatory term towards who he's talking to. That's what villains do, right? They're assholes.
That is pretty rough.
Well, Bendis has taken a lot of heat for this from the autistic community, and this line is going to be removed for all future printings of this comic book, whether that be in trade paperback or second prints, any sort of collections, this will be removed from the comic book. Now, I have a problem with this because that's how people talk. It's not nice, it's not kind, but it illustrates a character. It's not Bendis who said these things. Moxie said this and made, as a reader, you should feel angry about it. And you just like, I want somebody to beat this guy up because he talked like that. And he gets his comeuppance. It's maybe a cheap writing trick, but I don't think it's something that needs to be removed.
Not to be that person, but it's not like I haven't heard people say things like that before. And the other half of it is it's like, mob guys aren't big on vocabulary.
I mean,
are they a little derogatory? Probably, and it's probably not just towards, that. It's also probably towards women, towards anybody.
Towards race.
It's their derogatory people like that.
That's really, like, as far as him being a white writer, that there's only one towards race. There's only one word that he really can't write.
Right, exactly. You know? Well, and so when I brought this up to Pat, the question became, would this have been anything if it was in a novel?
So you mentioned the phrase, like, a cheap trick, and it is a cheap trick as far as, like, every part of writing. You want to get as much, like, little detail in as you can without being overbearing. And so the fact that he did do this, like, I mean, it's very extreme, obviously.
Right.
But the fact that he elicited such a reaction out of so many people is, shows how good of a writer he is.
Right.
Like, in a sense, like, yes, that person is terrible. That person is so terrible that people are literally up in arms enough to get this stricken from the comic book. That is how powerful of a writing tool that this is, and how well he characterized this person, that people have real world hatred for this sort of one-off kind of mob character.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing, Brian Michael Bendis. If anything, that's...
Well, that's, it's kind of like how it kind of makes me feel, like this seems like a tangent, but it's not. It's like them removing the N-word from, what is it, Huckleberry Finn? And like, that's the whole point of the book, though, is to show right. you, hey,
yeah.
dipshit. Well, yeah, a good plan. But that's how I feel about this, is it's like, so, like, people have to realize, like, I don't know. I read comics to read them, and it's, I don't usually take like a whole value from it, but that's how some people are. Like,
yeah, and
you can't hide yourself from that either.
Right, well, the thing I brought up to Nat specifically right after he told me, and I talked about Juno Diaz a bit ago on the show. I reviewed one of his recent books, but he's famous for writing a lot of stories and books, and he's a Pulitzer Prize winning author. From the character of Junior, who's this, like, incredibly sexist, racist, homophobic, like, super masculine, like, Brooklyn teen. And it's, like, narrated in his voice, and, like, he talks like this douchebag person.
Right.
And Juno Diaz, because he's a writer of novels instead of comic books, essentially, he's allotted for his ability to capture a voice.
Yep.
Or not allotted, excuse me. He's, oh no, I think that is the correct word. Yeah. For his ability to capture a voice. And then Brian Michael Bendis, I think you mentioned something interesting. It's because comics still aren't
They're not viewed as literature.
Or literature, you know?
I feel like in a novel written right now, if somebody wrote a novel and happened to have a mob character who said this to an underling,
see, that's the thing, though, nothing would happen. You would have to have people read, though, because in all reality, like, I've read a few things lately where people just don't read anymore, so that might be the other reason why things skirt under, but then you have stuff, like I said, like Huckleberry Finn, they're removing the N-word from the entire book and replacing it with slave.
Now, did that actually change? That's going on a tangent. Have they officially
done that? I don't remember. I just remember hearing about it when I was younger, and as a person who has read the book in high school, I'm like, that's the whole point of the book, is to show you that you're being a dipshit.
Exactly, show reality.
Yeah, you know, so it was just, it's like this, it's like the same point I have to this, which is, okay, so, no one ever talks like that, no one ever is like that, people aren't derogatory and assholes like this, never.
Right, exactly.
It's like, it's like comic books aren't reality, but they're based off reality, and that is the reality of some people.
The main thing about this is people, like, want to be too sheltered, as it is. Like, I mean, yes, this is an atrocious, terrible slur.
Yeah.
But that's the point, right? And that's... And they're exactly what you're saying. There's people out there that say these things. Why would you not reflect that in a work that you're showing? Until we fix that as a problem in this country, that's still going to be a problem in this country, or, you know, around the world.
Yeah.
Like, that is a thing right now. Writers, you know, while they try to better society typically, they're also reflecting society. And they... you know, use what they have at hand.
Yeah. And I thought it was intriguing that something like this happened in a Superman comic book, because it shows what they're doing in this is that the streets of Metropolis are shitty, too. Like, you got shitty people. And
I've always kind of been the kind of person, though, with a lot of things, I kind of have the feeling that say whatever you want, just remember there's consequences for what you say.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and that's kind of how, and like with and this, there it's was like
consequences to what that guy said.
And yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
he gets his ass beat in the next page.
Pretty sure he's dead.
Oh, I'm sure that was so satisfying too. Like, well, him as a character,
as a reader, because I didn't you know, maybe this makes me a terrible person, but I wasn't offended by that as I read through it. I was just like, I went, ooh, that was wrong. You know, like, that's what a jerk thing. My initial reaction was, what a jerk thing to say. I hope this guy gets his ass beat. And the next page, I was like, whoa, I was not expecting that.
Well, and the other part of it is like, it's the most, like, for what he was attempting to say, it's the most derogatory descriptor. Or not derogatory, but, like, the most descriptive way in a horrible way to explain what he was trying to say to somebody.
Two words.
Mm-hmm. Two words.
And he has, you know, million or like thousands of people literally like frothing at the mouth because of how pissed they are at that.
Well, that is because
that
I don't,
is powerful. That's powerful.
I've always felt that people don't understand anymore how to learn how to stop taking things at face value either. If you're like, oh, he said this in a comic and have absolutely no context around it, yeah, a bunch of people are going to get mad, and it's not like people usually look into things anymore.
Yeah, no, that kind of stuff right there is the literal magic of literature that Alan Moore rants about in his weird speeches.
Right.
Because Alan Moore is just weird.
You know, Bendis literally spoke two magical words and just enraged half the population, you know? He just cast a rage spell on thousands of people with two words.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing, is like, I didn't know about this before, and because for me I was like, oh, this is writing, this is how people act sometimes, this is
that's cool.
It's an attempt to bring light to something that's how people are. And my thing is it's like I said, I've never been one for like, oh, you can't say that. You want to call someone a derogatory race term or anything else? Like, I guess the way I look at it is, if you want to call me like a derogatory term, I don't talk to you. Are you a piece of shit? Yeah. And then I walk away and I'm like, still a piece of shit. Still probably using it. He'll have consequences eventually.
Yeah.
Not from me, but from something or somewhere. Yeah.
We got free speech, but not consequence-free speech in this country.
Yeah, that's basically how I feel about it. You wanna be a dick and say terrible things to people, like about their race, about their sex, about anything about them. Go for it. I can't promise you you'll do great in life.
Well, and the thing I'm saying is, I don't think Bendis said anything like
it wasn't him
negative. No, he had a character say something, and that character had all of those reactions of, you know, like, yeah, that character got their comeuppance too for being an asshole. And
well, it's like I said, it's like Huckleberry Finn to me all over again, which I'm like, the point is to show you people are like this.
You know, context is everything too, because if like Brian Michael Bendis had things in the past with like, you know, that community like riffs with them, then people would be like, ooh, BMB, what are you getting up with? But nothing. Like, he's never had any like controversial moral clashes with minority groups of any kind, as far as I know. And so like, context. It's not like he had a page in the back where it's like, I like to dedicate this comic to all the stupid, dumb, idiot people out there that I hate and I hope don't read this comic.
So, you know? for me personally, it's a non-issue, and I don't know. It's like the comic you talked about with Spider-Man.
For me, it's cool.
A little bit. It's just
it shows how powerful literature is. It's cool.
But I said, part of the other thing is too, is like, any more new books, anymore people don't really read, so they're not going to get upset about anything.
I mean,
comic books fall in that realm because people will read those because it's not really, to them, it's not reading.
Yeah, I had such a reaction to hearing that people like they were going to change the words that I was like, I don't understand. Like, I guess from my perspective, it's just about
seems like it's kind of like it's like to me, it's like, oh, so you're trying to change history? It's still there, and for those who don't realize it, you're doomed to repeat it. So, like, you know, things like that. People are like, I like to call them virtue signalers, the ones who virtue signal about this stuff.
Well, like in the they're fact probably that you said the
same
too,
probably the same exact people who use language like that.
And I mean, you said too that he was apologetic for it.
Oh yeah, he apologized. He didn't realize that was going to cause that, but you know, in second guessing, said, okay, let's remove this from future printings.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have preferred it to be kept in, but you know, writing it that way just because you know censorship of art is a weird thing to all artists. Yeah,
and that was my bigger question is like, if we really viewed this as art, would it be an issue, or would it just be a reflection of our times and like how bad and how powerful language is? Like that's, it's an interesting question. It was definitely something that in a comic book that I personally loved, and I think that was the other thing was I'm surprised by Action Comics right now because it is not the book I want to be reading, but I can't seem to put it down. It was one of the few things that I read twice. I think that's probably it for today. Some ponderings to leave everybody with.
That's a good question. Good topic, Matt.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, I said all I have to say about it.
I said, it is what it is, and I think people just need to realize, this is reality, and I said, I think the people who are probably most at fault for stuff like that are usually the ones who are most enraged.
And again, read the comics as a full thing.
Too.
Read an entire story and let things be a piece of the story.
Well, with that said, I guess...